All right. Hi, everybody. It's RCFB Talk 185. It is Tuesday night. This is when we like to talk to you about everything going on in college football. My name is Bob Akhayeri. I'm your host. It's always great to join you all. So there's so much stuff going on. As I've said, this has been an offseason where we have a constant flow of stuff going on. I see John's already got his hand up. I'll be happy to let you up here in a second. Couple of quick news and notes. And I mean, there's a lot more in-depth ones we can get into. But on a lighter note, I figured I'd start out with the fact that EA College Football 25 is apparently going to include all the bowl games. So there we go. Pop-Tarts Bowl is going to be there. Independence Bowl, all of those are going to be there. Last week, I remember some of the information we were hearing was so many of the college awards were not going to be in the game. However, the Heisman is. So I'm hoping they'll come up with some creative ways to solve, you know, the Blitnikoff can just be the best wide receiver, or maybe my favorite suggestion was, and I think I saw this in the comment section of RCFB, was that they should just have whichever player won the previous year, just name it after them within the game. But I thought that was neat. But anyway, let's let some folks up here. I see John. I see Ski Mask Smurfy. I'll get you both up here as well. You know, another big topic was obviously today there was a hearing on Capitol Hill. And, you know, it was pretty easy to summarize. I mean, it was hosted by, put together by Texas Senator Ted Cruz. But really, it was an opportunity. And you could tell it was a lot of folks who just wanted to be there to see Nick Saban. And I thought Russ Dellinger did a great job of summarizing what was going on. That, you know, I'll read how Ross summarized it. Main takeaway: most here, from Nick Saban to senators and collectives, believe a revenue sharing model is necessary in college athletics, but not employment. And I should be clear that Nick Saban was clearly there representing the views of the conferences as well as the NCAA in some regards. And while this roundtable was described as NIL, it was more about employment and revenue sharing. Even in the most charitable view, and that was of the senator who put it together himself, he thought there was a 50-50 chance of any legislation being passed. I think most people think it's lower than that. And I don't blame him for putting a higher one. If you just called this roundtable, I wouldn't blame him for giving it 50-50. But the odds of something really coming out of that are pretty low. And again, lots of respect for Nick Saban. Obviously, he's peerless in his coaching. But I know some people were a little bit more critical of him because I guess at one point, Nick Saban said his wife, Terry, came to him before his retirement and told him, "Why are we doing this?" And that she had told them the players now only care about how much money they are making. That is, and I'm going to give a lot of credit to Saban because he's also said things that I think are a little more balanced than that. That one, it rings a little hollow only because, you know, it's like the players couldn't be paid above the table. They couldn't get NIL deals. So to say that things have changed is a little disingenuous. I'm sure if you talked to players 10 years ago, 20 years ago, they would be thrilled to get some of the deals that the current players are getting. So I think things haven't changed. It's just in the sense of how people think. It's just that now they can be more open about what they want and need without the NCAA necessarily hammering them for it. So I think that was part of it. You know, another thing, and there was an interesting say, because again, Saban's, most of his conversations, I think, have been quite generous about it. I mean, he's willing to kind of to be fair. He's saying, like, well, the way I prefer to coach, the way I enjoyed coaching has just changed too much. I mean, I remember one of his quotes, it's like, "I'm not saying it's wrong, it's just different." So I think he's just tired of coach. I mean, think about it. At this point, he's in the 70s. He's done. He doesn't want to do it anymore. He's the best coach that ever lived. He can absolutely walk away. I mean, Fielding Yost, okay, well, maybe feel like 120 years ago, there might be somebody who could compete with him. But, you know, at this point, I think Saban earned it. And I think one thing, my takeaway from all of this, and one that I recommend people kind of consider, you don't have to adopt it, but consider it, is there will be people who are in this younger crop of coaches who will be able to adapt to this new system and make it work. Maybe not at the level of Nick Saban, just because he's such a singular coaching ability. But there will be coaches. There's so many people who want to be head coaches in college football that there will be folks who can make this balance and strike the balance with the changes we are getting now. So I just figured I want to at least touch on that a little bit, only because that was sort of the story of the day. John, what's going on?
Hey, man, how you doing tonight?
I'm good. You know, we're going to not have a show next week because I'm going to spring break with my kids, and I actually scheduled like, you know, we're going to Vegas for a week, and my kids are not nearly gambling age, but it's sort of a fun opportunity just to kind of go do silly things with them. But yeah, I'm going to let them, I'm going to not let them use a slot machine, but we're going to go to a show on Tuesday night that I really want to go to with them, like one of the big Cirque du Soleil Ka. So next week, there isn't going to be one, but I think we do a break. I'm sure nothing will happen next week. And I say that knowing that I just summoned the football gods to do something really interesting.
Yeah. You messed up big time. Just say it out loud. But you know, I mean, Vegas will be fun. Vegas has gotten a lot more kid friendly in the last couple of years. Now, with gambling legalized in so many other states, Vegas has definitely taken more of a turn to be a little more family friendly now. Now they have to cater to more ages.
Well, and you know, I've said this in the past, but I grew up about less than four hours away. So for me, that was like going to the cabin. So I've been going to Vegas since I was five. So yeah, no, Circus was like the coolest thing. I remember when Circus was cool. That's how old I am. So, I mean, there'll be stuff for them to see. Pinball Hall of Fame, you know, lots of shows. They can watch Dad be gluttonous with food. It'll be fun. It'll be a good time. But what's on your mind, man?
You were just really mentioning it, the hearing today. I know a lot of people have their opinions on Nick Saban, the negative ones mainly being from fans of teams that have gotten beaten by him multiple times and times again. I've always had deep respect for him because I think, like you said, he's one of the best coaches of all time, hands down. I was really disappointed by why I felt like a charade today. It was a very disappointing thing to listen to. Him rant about, guys want to get paid where I'm sorry. He was the most powerful coach in the land, making millions of dollars. His players, I'm not saying they were getting paid under the table before, but I mean, let's be honest, that's not a complete out of the question type thing to even consider in the first place. And we're talking about a guy who makes millions. There's so many coaches out there that are working jobs in the off season in the lower levels, and there's assistant coaches that are barely scraping by. So I hear, you can't hear it, but I'm playing my smallest violin right now for someone who is getting private jet rides while other people are struggling to feed their families, trying to be a head, trying to even get a remote chance to be even FBS or FCS coach. So that's my thoughts on it. I just think the whole thing's ridiculous when, it was a very frustrating thing to even see today.
You know, I will say this, and Ski Master Murphy, I see your hand up and I want you to come on next. The one takeaway I had from all of it is people have to realize this was that there was a mission with this. And I'm not saying it in a nefarious way. It's a classic strategy. Because he was advocating for something that it conflicts with itself. I don't want them to be employees, but I want them to share in the revenue in some way. And this is kind of the hope, the Hail Mary of a lot of the college programs and conferences, that they can skirt the employee thing, because that can be very costly. That can be and open up a whole bevy of issues. And without any congressional legislation changing the rules and making it like carving out exceptions to existing laws for college sports, the likelihood of that happening is impossible. Like, it's inevitable that they're going to be ruled employees. So that's why they gathered Nick Saban, his former athletic director at obviously Alabama, Greg Byrne, and ACC Commissioner Jim Phillips, because they wanted to have these were all selected because they could give this kind of unified front asking for legislation that creates a more regulated framework around athletic compensation. And while saying, the current situation is Wild West, all this stuff, but really what they're trying to do is they're trying to get Congress to act on it. And as I said at the beginning, Ted Cruz, he hosted this and he gave a 50-50 chance, which was, I thought, generous of this ever passing, because the problem is it isn't a real high priority for Congress in some ways. And also they don't entirely agree on it. Like, from what I understand, there are two schools of thought. Do you create a new government, an extra governmental agency to look over it, or do you somehow think the NCAA can do it? There are people that really in Congress that really think the NCAA can still handle all of this. And I think that therein lies the conflict within Congress and the fact that we may not see any action on it. But Ski Master Murphy, what's your thoughts?
Yeah, my thoughts on seeing the whole, I guess, government conference on it it's hard for a guy to say that you're upset that the kids only care about money, about trying to put it on your wife, when literally for over the past decade, he has been the highest paid government employee in the country. Because he's a university coach, so he's a government employee. Those are tax dollars and some boosted dollars probably going to him. But easily your highest paid coach in your sport, I believe also in the NFL, because NFL is more than a player. So you're the highest paid guy in your sport who does coaching. And it's weird for him to like say this about the players. Even I can remember, who was it? Safety played for the New York Giants in Washington. Oh, Landon Collins. I remember his national signing day with the incident where his mother got highly upset that he chose Alabama over LSU.
Classic, yes.
And then they asked her what was the issue about it. And she said that she didn't like how Nick Saban and the coaches at Alabama were all just telling her son how we're going to make him a pro and he's going to make millions, versus the coaches at LSU saying, hey, here's how we're going to develop you and make sure you actually go to class and get grades. So he's also always been about the money. It all just seems like a charade, because college coaches and the NCAA as a whole are also like trying to figure out how to seize back power, because it feels like it's almost pure communism in that statement where it's like, you know, the employees are now seizing the means of production. And with NIL, the players are making a great way through it. But
I agree with you on that. And by the way, didn't his mom steal the letter of intent? I remember that. That was why, for those who don't remember, that was what made that story wilder.
Yeah, she snatched it off the table, which is excellent move. Excellent. If there's any level of showmanship left in sports, she put it out there. You got to make things entertaining for the people.
Yeah, my two favorite of the, especially the height of the letter of intent ceremonies, was her stealing the letter of intent and that dude who just made up the fact that he was going to go to Cal or wherever it was. Like, no.
University of Hawaii. Oh, I know what you're talking about. I watched
it. He ended up at some JUCO in California as like a redemption story, but he famously held a press conference, so the press went and covered it. And Cal was like, we have no records of this guy at all. You know, we've never talked to him before. And he just straight up faked it. And I loved it. It was great. Like, those are two of the wildest stories I think we ever had at the height. Because we're past that point. When they added early signing day, you know, and then the rise of the importance of the transfer portal, it's taken the heat off of that, which I don't mind. I thought they were a little stupid, to be honest. Stupid fun, but I never got as into them, I think, as some other people did. But, John, your hand was up.
Yeah, I just wanted to go back to point that we were just talking about here. I want to say just another point of it, like how hypocritical this whole thing is. We're watching news bits about the Big Ten and the SEC trying to negotiate $1 billion deals right now for TV revenue and extra spots in the playoff, and we're really talking about how the game has died. In the eyes of some coaches, because now athletes can get compensation. I just another point I just want to throw out there. Additionally, as well, I know you also mentioned the two routes we really could be, if the NCAA can handle it or it goes to a government or a governmental branch. For those who don't know, that's a governmental branch is not too crazy of an idea. I would say we're probably one of the biggest first world countries that don't have a sports ministry. I think most European countries have them at this point, and and from what I've seen, they are pretty effective. It all depends on your country and what's been going on there. But I would say that's not a completely crazy route to go, and I know there'll always be pushback on it, but I would say if there's a route that seems feasible that between the two of them at this point, that could be the one that works.
Interesting. Ski Mask Murphy.
Yeah, I was just going to make a comment on the governmental agency running sports. I mean, it's something that's pretty prominent everywhere else. It's the reason why Messi was basically forced to leave Barcelona, because in Spain, the Spanish soccer leagues are all basically, they're not run by the government, but the government tells them, based on your previous revenue and expenditures the previous season, and what we expect this year, we tell you how much you can pay your players. Which, if you didn't know, Messi had a contract that was, he was literally getting paid $160 million a year by the team. So they had to cut 60% of their pay, so he had to go. But yeah, it's something that I believe we could implement here, even though the government does move slow. But I think on this, if it's like a small department, just focus on, hey, we're just looking at NCAA football and not, you know, giving interviews to baseball players to ask if they did steroids. And I think it can move a lot faster.
You know, I'm skeptical of whether it would develop out, but the way I thought, you know, as listening to both of you discuss this, it's interesting. I could see something popping up if, you know, there's a shift to employment and it is just a pure employment model, like all the athletes have to get paid. So this could, you know, wreak havoc with the Olympic sports, the non-revenue sports, which is basically everything from most schools, some women's basketball, some hockey, but basically every sport that isn't men's basketball and football. And, you know, would that be where it would pop up? Like, we've got to save Olympic sports, you know? And then suddenly I'm like, okay, now I could see that might be the window for it in some ways, just because, you know, I was looking at some of the quotes from the roundtable. Again, that's how they describe it, a roundtable that was held on Capitol Hill. And, Alabama athletic director Greg Byrne mentioned that they had a $40 million deficit from non-revenue sports that was filled by the revenue of football and basketball and doesn't want to cut sports, but there isn't an unlimited amount of money, as some believe. It's not a bad argument, but when you've listened to it and you know the amount of money they are pulling in, potentially in football, you know that there's more than enough coming in, which would probably be the counter argument to that. But, I can see where they're going. And there's certainly, to be fair, Alabama, and there are certain schools that do pull in an insane amount of money. There's a lot of schools at FBS level that don't. So they are running red no matter what. And they're continually getting, you know, bailed out by the larger university. So it would be a shakeout. And then that's where I'd be a little concerned. And I could see some more radical approach in that. It wouldn't be that radical. As you said, so many other countries have it. Just to kind of aim at those Olympic sports, those non-revenue sports that might otherwise be lost, and frankly lose. It depends how much we value that. Those Olympians that the U.S. is so good at, and developing them at the college level. John, your hands up.
Yeah, speaking of, talk about non-Olympic sports. I know it sounds like I know this probably upset a lot of peers up there, but would there ever be a possibility of, you know, say for a sailing program or a rowing program, for them to be privately sponsored as a program as a whole, you know, something they, you know, they have some, you know, advertising put, you know, put on the rowboat or put on the uniforms, especially by a sponsor, and just so it, you know, so essentially, I know this sounds nauseating to a lot of people, but I, you know, it could be a great option to help keep those programs in the green.
I think it could work. I mean, it would be more or less the same way as like having an alum come and bail out a particular sport that they love. I just don't know how much appetite there would be or how much of an audience there would be for the people that would pay for that. But yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see if we end up down that road where how do we save the non-revenue sports and what work needs to be done to do it. You know, another thing, because again, sort of just talking sort of in another topic slightly, I wanted to fit a few more in here. North Carolina rescinded through the governor the state's executive order that was functioning as the NIL law, mostly because they realized after the Tennessee case, which of course Tennessee and Virginia sued the NCAA, a judge granted a preliminary injunction that has basically negated all rules the NCAA could possibly enforce on NIL rules in their state and therefore the NCAA has said they've paused all enforcement right now. So who knows what all those guys in the compliance department are doing right now. But after that, as a result, North Carolina went ahead and rescinded their own NIL law because it was no longer necessary at this point. Another interesting note, and this is one that I don't think will surprise those who love following, you know, college sports in the sense of particularly NCAA tournament. When you get a team like, for example, that George Mason run, I remember when they had a deep run into the NCAA basketball tournament, George Mason suddenly had a huge, you know, a number of applicants. Alabama has seen an incredible number of applicants increase with the success of Nick Saban bringing the Alabama name and making it more national. So they're getting a lot of out-of-state students. But unsurprisingly, again, I know he's a polarizing figure, but his ability to pull in attention is peerless. Colorado has reported a record-breaking 68,000 applications in the fall of 2024 so far, a 20% increase from last year. And, you know, and among Black students, there is up 50%. And those are numbers from the paper there. I mean, that's striking. That allows you to be very, I mean, I'm not going to say they're going to jump into the selectivity level like Harvard or anything like that, but that boosts everything up. And that's something we've seen, particularly with the basketball tournament, always comes up. Every school that like has some great Cinderella run sees a spike versus like, you know, the Blue Bloods, or people know you're going there because they're a great basketball school. But that was an interesting one, and one I wanted to mention there only because of the prime effect. Certainly you see, again, the benefit that they probably saw in what they paid there. Let's see here. Someone else who wanted to join us. Hank, what's going on? Feel free to hit unmute. It's in the bottom left.
What do you think about Clay Travis saying that the nightmare scenario of a top college football player holding out for more money until the day of the game? Who do you think that's about?
Boy, I don't know if there's anyone's. I think that sounds more like a hypothetical in a lot of ways. I mean, I don't know if that would go anywhere. I think, you know, there is this weird, and I think because we're in the offseason, this is happening a lot. There's a lot of articles that are like talking about, and people, everywhere. Like there's reporters I enjoy reading, and they just, a lot of them have been spinning their wheels on this. I think college football is going to be fine. I'm very much like, you know, it's going to change a little bit, but. Especially with the public. Like, here's the thing. Like, especially in the offseason, we've got, like, the hardcore people. Like, who's paying attention to college football in March? You know, especially when we get to May, which is, like, the nadir of all information, you know, where it hits the bottom. I think a lot of fans, especially, like, neutral fans, people that just kind of pay attention during the season, aren't going to care about any of this stuff. And people are saying, like, oh, they're going to care about, oh, there's something getting paid. It's like, everyone knows they're getting paid now. The NIL thing is kind of, I think, sort of permeated the consciousness. Like, the thing I just talked about with Deion Sanders effect, the thing that was striking when his games, especially when they were doing well, is the audience that was coming in weren't people that were, like, college football, like, hardcore fans. They were just, like, new fans. You know, and when you see that effect, when you see the people that are just coming in because the product is interesting, not necessarily good, but interesting. I mean, you know, say what you will, but the Sanders stuff was interesting. I think they don't really care as much about this stuff. So I've been wondering, you know, the number of people who decry it. And I mean, I'm talking like the comment sections I'll read on RCFB, because obviously we have lots of them. You'll see the person's like, oh, this is going to kill football for me. I'm like, okay. I mean, I'm not doubting them. They're valid to think that. But I think I don't know if the attrition of that group is going to be significant once we see, you know, if the profile of college football rises. I'm not sure how that's going to play out. You know, there are some smaller schools that are going to be, I mean, let's say things go totally nuclear and like only the top FBS programs, the ones that are in the SEC, Big Ten, maybe a few more kind of escapees jump on these two rafts as they ascend. I mean, yeah, you're going to lose some fan bases, but I'm not sure what the net benefit is going to be. And there will be some significant ones, but there'll also be like, I hate to keep picking on them, but let's say Akron. If Akron suddenly finds they're not playing FBS football, I'm not sure that the loss is going to be as significant as the gain that might be if there's a pull in. And I could be wrong on this 100%, but I think that's where I'm a little, like, I feel like if we get players now, okay, now I kind of went in a totally different, I went sidestep because you asked a very good question, Hank, and you know, the theme, I mean, would a player potentially hold out until they can, I think there's nothing that's going to keep a player from being cut, and I wonder how toxic that will make them in the transfer portal. You'll get people who would be certainly willing to take a bet on them. As long as you got talent, I mean, hell, look at the coaches, right? I mean, a lot of jokes have been made about Bobby Petrino back at Arkansas right now. So, I mean, certainly if you've got talent, sometimes people are willing to look the other way a little bit in circumstances, but eventually you just burn people out. So we've seen that happen before, especially if you can't deliver. But I think it's interesting. What are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I mean, I just graduated from Ole Miss, and I was just there this past year. And my only thing is, I know some people connected, whatever, but the, which I'm not blaming him for it or anything else, but the Kinshawn Judkins scenario. I think
that's, yeah, I'd be curious how much money they threw at him, because that everyone was kind of like, whoa.
I have no clue how much like they threw at him and whatnot, but I would not be surprised. I mean, you could even tell like later on in the season that obviously there was a little bit of quit in the kid when it came towards the end. And who knows, like, I'm not accusing anybody of tampering because everybody's tampering. That's just whatever. But, yeah, you know, I'm just saying that, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, that might have been a factor in somebody maybe possibly trying to back out before a game or whatnot, you know.
It'd be interesting to see it happen because certainly, you know, even before – gosh, even before, because I'm trying to think of a good analogy of stuff we've seen before. Even before all the NIL stuff, we had, you know, incidents where players have actually protested by not wanting to participate in games. But the most famous was Grambling, because they were so upset. And yeah, it's FCS, but I mean, you know, they were so upset at the facilities that they actually mutinied, is the way I've heard it phrased. And Arizona, their players nearly mutinied, and that actually led to them kicking out of, got the head coach. He was at Texas, and he got absolutely – he's infamous at Texas because he was the losing end of Route 66 when UCLA went there and just absolutely obliterated them in 98. But that's how old I am. I can remember that off the top of my head, but I can't remember the coach's name. But, yeah, no, I mean, I think that's kind of a comparison. Like, I remember when players were like – they literally had to, like, accede to their demands in order to keep the game even on the way. You know, we have a couple of hands up, and then I also want to let Redneck Nerd, who's been patient, converse as well. But let's hear Ski Mask Smurfy and John.
Yeah, that was a very long tangent going on that time. But I would say I don't think a player is going to hold out similar to the way it happens in the NFL because of the NFL. You're only allowed to dress 48 guys for a game. So that puts things in constringent, but college football, I think they're still allowed to dress all 105 guys who are allowed on the roster. So it's, at that point, it's a little bit more distant, but I believe last year, a University of Miami basketball player said that he was going to hold out and stay in the transfer portal until he got an NIL package at the amount that he wanted. So I could see it in other sports, maybe not college football, but I don't think one player is going to have enough pull, even though Arch Manning's trying to flex a little bit with EA Sports. I don't think one player is going to have enough pull to force a holdout to get a bigger NIL deal.
You know, for Art, to defend Arch just a second, he's flexing in a weird way. He's like, I don't need the money. You know, only when I'm the starter am I going to get it. And I'm like, all right, okay. But yeah, no, I agree though. Yeah, I'm with you on that. I'm not sure if there is a player who can quite do that unless, yeah, okay, you know, Caleb Williams theoretically could have in some weird way, but I think he was savvy enough, like return. He was savvy enough not to burn that bridge. Cause again, can you imagine, like, you're going to be heading especially if you're on your way to the NFL, like the teams are going to get your red flag is going to be so bright at that point. My goodness, especially if you pull that stuff, because they're going to be ready for you when it comes to a contract negotiation. John, and then let's get to Redneck Nerd.
Yeah, I will say, first of all, every time I see a polarizing article or tweet or podcast, I always think the same thing, that someone has rent or a mortgage payment due, because it always feels like they're just trying to do whatever they can for a quick click. Also, the other thing I want to mention, man, what has Akron done to you, man? You poor Akron gets
becomes the. They've started with the letter A, and I just automatically in my head I go to them before anybody else. I don't know why.
They're the quickest one to go to.
And I always remember they were like until UMass joined, they were like I think the most recent team to join that's currently in the MAC, because they've actually moved up. They're in my head a little bit like Idaho in that, like, they moved up from FCS and it just was a bad idea because they just have not been able to get anything going there. And they're like, but I want them to do well. And I remember they paid for a new stadium and all that money, and it just hasn't worked because they were in the Rubber Bowl, weren't they? Oh, man, that broke my heart. That was such a great stadium name. But
but that stadium is going to pieces.
Oh, my goodness. It looks like they should. I don't know if anyone ever got around to filming like a post-apocalyptic movie in that thing, but it turned into a husk. fast.
They should. But also, as a civil engineer, I have to say, I don't know whose decision it was, but it was not a good decision to make one end of the stadium basically an embankment hill that holds up the road above it. I don't know who thought of that, but it wasn't a good idea. It wasn't cute.
Yeah, it definitely gives me some Baltic post-communism 1990s vibes to that place. It's that's a rough one to look at, no matter
what. Oh, you hit it right on the head with that.
Oh my goodness. Hey, Redneck Nerd, what's up? You've been super patient.
Hey there. So I guess the one question it's something that we kind of talked about around the office. And so we've seen with the NIL, the changes, and of course, Nick Saban coming up in the Congress today, which is something I never thought would be coming out of my mouth, but it happened. We're seeing USC and UCLA leaving the Pac-12, which was such a dominant conference. And I'm only 28 years old, but I remember, being a diehard Sooner fan, watching Matt Leinart and Reggie Bush just absolutely demolish everyone. You would never imagine that those conferences would break up, and you've got, and of course, A&M going to the SEC back, 10 years ago, and you've got now West Coast schools going into the Midwest. I guess my question is that when you look at the SEC and the Big Ten, right, what makes them big was, for lack of better terms, Alabama, LSU, Ole Miss starting to, kick some major ass. And then you've got Ohio State and Michigan, Michigan State falling off, which we never thought we'd see. So, what I'm alluding to is what schools leaving the Big Ten and the SEC do you think would cause the biggest ruckus?
Oh, man. Well, Ohio State would be the easiest one for the at this point. Michigan too, but I think Ohio State at this point, if somehow they left, that would be a kick right in the pants. And at this point,
where would they go?
Well, yeah, I know the only one who could possibly pull them off would be the SEC. One theory, and again, I don't think the SEC could possibly. I don't think the SEC and Big Ten could poach from each other at this point. They're just too close, and I don't know. It would be odd. I don't know what they could really offer each other, but. The thought I've had, it's not even a thought I've had. It's one I've heard bandied about in one of the more interesting conversations about this isn't a near term thing, but let's say in the next 10 years, and this is when we were looking at a 12-team playoff, let alone whatever number they're going to end up with, right? If it starts to devalue the conference title games, and if teams start to realize your real goal is not so much to win the conference, but to get into the playoff and position yourself well and go through, would we eventually see a team decide that, we just think independence makes more financial sense? I don't know when we'll reach up. And the reason would be further in the future. This is something I've mentioned, and I haven't heard a good answer yet. And I mean, reading around, I haven't seen a good answer yet. The Pac-12's demise was predicated on that terrible deal. Well, it wasn't even that terrible of a deal, but it was a deal that was a product of the situation of media shifting. Like, the terrestrial cable packages have been dying off due to the cord cutting, and no one could give them a good deal, as this Apple deal, which was not that good to begin with, that caused the precipitated demise. And we've seen another hint that the TV money is drying up. And this has been expected in a lot of ways. When the new college football playoff media deal is more than what they were getting before, it's more, but it's by all indications, it's not as much as people thought they were going to get. First of all, they didn't get bids from Fox or NBC or CBS. It was just ESPN was the only one that bid on it again, and they increased the amount of money, but it's not quite as high. And so the thought is, when we get to the next round of renegotiations in the 2030s, it may not be coming. Terrestrial cable may not be able to supply the amount of money to the conferences that they used to do. And if we reach that point, will the streaming services be able to be comparable, or will it just be a kind of every team for himself, like who can make the best, who can cut the best deal for themselves? And if we reach that point, that's like, this is like, we're talking 10 years from now, sort of thinking of where that could go. And it's really interesting when you get into it. And so therefore, sort of going back to what you said, like, so if we did see a big team leave, like an Ohio State or whatever, team is currently peaking in the SEC. I mean, you say Alabama, maybe it'll be Georgia, then it would be an interesting thing to see what they decide to do. Ski Master Murphy, your hand's up, by the way.
Yeah, I just wanted to comment on the whole, teams leaving that would sort of tank a conference. And I mean, before adding in all the extra teams on for the Big Ten and SEC. I would say the SEC sort of seems like a little bulletproof, because even if you combine like the conglomerate of the sports that are really on TV, if you take out Alabama and LSU, still a pretty good conference with Georgia, Tennessee, Mississippi State, and the rest of the game. But the Big Ten, like, if it was two teams, any combination of the four of Michigan, Michigan State, Ohio State, and Penn State, two of those believe that we're in trouble. But also, I just want to comment, like, I feel like with conference realignment sort of cycling and going, and how it's been going, if with the whole FSU trying to leave the ACC, if they were to, you know, theoretically join the SEC, the SEC would need like another team to balance it out. Then you got 18 teams. It feels like they're getting to the point where it's like, as you say, with streaming cables redoing itself, it sort of seems like college football is going to like redo building conferences. Because if you get to an 18-team conference, everyone's just going to be like, yo, just split it down the middle with 9 and 9. Then it's like, it's not really a conference, it's two conferences. But that's my opinion.
Yeah, it is interesting to see that. And then I know I was reading an article that, again, Ross Dellinger was kind of writing about how the thinking's been going. And it sounds like, again, the lawyers at Clemson and some of the other schools are also quietly preparing their own maneuvers if things do start to break apart there. John, your hands up. And then let's get to Elizabeth.
Yeah, so I think you mentioned a really interesting point where, you know, we talk about the future landscape of TV rights and talking about the possibility, you know, every team for themselves. What possibility do we think that it really comes down to a point where instead of conferences doing TV deals, it's going to be individual teams like Notre Dame does with NBC. You know, do individual teams do different streaming services so their games can be played when they're for their home games, and if so, what streaming service does Akron get put on in that situation?
Hey, I. Oh, my brothers and sisters from the Zips who are hearing this. That one was not me. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see how that even would work with individuals. My goodness. Hey, Elizabeth, what's going on?
Hey, Babak. Oh, first of all, I'd like to make one quick statement regarding Bobby Petrino. And yes, I am a diehard Razorback, and we welcome him back because 10-2 is so much better than 2-10. And we have forgiven him. And then the second thing, the performance of these guys getting paid, what Nick Saban said, it is all about the money. But don't you think that they have to perform? Because you can't be making $1 million if you're not performing. And somebody else is going to be making $200,000 and they're doing better than you?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, it'll be curious to see how they come up with ways to restructure the NIL deals. You know, we started to see that, I think, last year, especially with, his name just slipped my mind, the whole Florida, that Florida kid who ended up at Arizona State. You know, we've seen, I think, we're watching basically these collectives learn the ins and outs of how to structure a deal. Right. So it would be curious to see. I know the idea of doing it in installments has come up, and I think that is something a lot of them have started to do. Like, all right, we'll give you some of this money here, some of this money there, so you can't just, right, you know, hand over a ton of money. But yeah, no, it's awkward. I don't know if you could how that would go over if you had to reduce payments on a key player. Can you imagine? Like, you're not performing.
Yeah, but the thing is, it's before. I really believe, just like if it's, you know, kind of like the real world where, mm-hmm, it's performance based, then you have to perform. You have to, if you're going to make $1 million, you have to earn the $1 million. You can't just be, oh yeah, I'm the shiny new quarterback when somebody else is back there. So I'm just thinking there's going to be ways. I think it's going to be redefined in the next probably couple of years, whether it's like, hey, you need to stay here for 2 years, be developed and hit these numbers or hit certain things to earn this, because if you don't think you're confident enough, I don't know. I mean, I just think a lot of things are going to change in the next 2 years.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I think you could come up with some kinds of, you know, benchmarks, things where they have to hit in order to unlock certain things. It'll exactly be interesting to see, especially if these contracts start to get more complicated as they move on. Ski Mask Murphy, your hands up as well.
Well, Elizabeth, nice to see you. It's always welcome to hear your voice.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. I would say it's, I hear what you're saying, but it's like the way the NCAA has set up things makes it so it's nearly impossible to work out anything long term. Because first, NIL has to be based off of, it cannot be based off of on-field performance. It can be based off of performance of like going actually doing commercials and things you're scheduled to do, but it cannot be based on-field performance. So in a way it's sort of set up in a, how can I put it, like in a place that has more short-term contracts like the NBA, where it's like your contract is fully guaranteed for the season, but how much we're paying you this season is based on what we saw you do last season. So whatever you're gonna get paid this season, that's already worked out. But if you're a dud this season, next season, they're not gonna pay you as much. But they can't do long term contracts, even though through a very reliable and valid source, I've heard some NIL deals being worked out for a transfer player for 2 years. But I don't know how and why, but that also makes the transfer portal work, is that your letter of intent slash contract to play with the school is only good for a year. It's only good for that season. And then the coach can terminate it at any given point in time when they feel like it. So you can't really, and an NIL collective wouldn't want to work out nothing more than a 1 year deal with any player, even though there's things that happen.
Totally makes sense. I get it. I didn't know that. I'm still perplexed by how in college football they can sign a Jimbo Fisher to, you know, $100 million deal that's not, again, performance based, where it's guaranteed. So you get to walk away with what, $79 million for being bad? I want that job. I do. That would be fun.
As a popular saying, you know, nothing is better than being a fired head coach. hey, Quacker Pie, you're back. What's up?
Hello there. So I've been hearing a lot about realignment recently, and as a TCU fan, I am very, very worried that we will be left behind. So I have my delusional solution for you. Make it European soccer. Just relegation, promotion, 5 tiers of college football. All just kind of replicate English football and see if it works out. It's better than what they have been doing, which is just the eventual collapse of conferences altogether.
Yeah, no, that has been a beloved topic for many. Before we've done our CFP talks in college football forums for years, you know, I will quickly re-advocate my favorite model, which is the one they do in the college football. And there is a college football system in Japan of about a couple hundred teams. The conferences there are all vertically integrated. So it's like Division I, Division II, Division III in the same conference. So they literally at the end of the season have the bottom. It's not automatic. The bottom two teams play the top two teams in, you know, interdivision. And if the lower division team wins, they switch places the next season. The only problem with all of this stuff is there's so much money that's been invested in college football. No one's going to agree to that. Can you imagine that year where it's like, sorry, dude, I know you have 100,000 seat stadium, but you got to go play in the MAC now. You know, I mean, it's just,
and that's why I called it delusional.
Yeah, exactly. I know, but it's fun. It's a really fun one to imagine. But, I love it.
But does that mean teams get relegated?
Yeah, well, yeah, that would be it. It could go all the way to Alabama playing the fifth tier of college football. Love to see it.
Akron will finally be the champion of the Big Ten. Mighty Akron's going to climb the way up, crush those before them. Because that'll be what happened. Akron will have a good year. They'll play Indiana. They'll crush them. They'll move up to the Big Ten. And then suddenly everyone's going to want to go play for Akron. Because look at that. You can be the star of Akron. And then, you know, they're going to get some of that tire money. You know, they're going to come in there and their NIL deals are going to be sweet. Yeah, we'll imagine that, you know. So bless Akron. You know, I just have to name this one story I wanted to mention because it's been just this wacky story in the background that is absolute nonsense. But I don't know if you guys saw this, but this ex-Vanderbilt quarterback who briefly was also, I guess, a backup at USC. He says they, that he was
they deleted my post on the Reddit on this. I hate
yeah, he's in Nashville at some bar. I think it was in Nashville, and some he says the Italian mob came up to him and asked him to fix SEC football games. He's a backup. He had 17 passes in, I think, his entire career.
Oh, I saw that. I saw that. Go ahead.
No. I know that. My favorite, I can
give a few more details because I looked into it before I posted it.
But I just have to say, my favorite response was from a Clemson fan, Jim Bean. He's like, so Vandy's been throwing football games this entire time? Can you imagine Vanderbilt's actually, like, all these coaches at Vanderbilt are wondering, like, I'm recruiting these guys. They're supposed to be great. Why do they completely flop? No, I mean, Ski Mask Murphy, please, love to hear your thoughts on this.
Okay, so my thoughts on it was, like, at first you just see the video and it's like, okay, weird. And it's like, if they have a quarterback, they just about keep him because no one wants to play there, but I'll get his stats and everything. So I was like, I'll kind of put the pieces of the puzzle together because, like, when you see stats, like, yeah, he only started one game in his career in which he did upset a ranked Missouri team that year. So he could play some football. But it's like, I put the pieces of circuit. Well, first off, the videos from 2021, which is the thing that sort of got me, was like, why is it? But someone reposted it recently and then it just sort of just spread. And someone had a graphic that was like, Alabama was rigging their game, so I guess the person's trying to get their engagements. But I put the story together, and basically it seems like, because from the comments he made to his teammate, and going back and reading articles, basically it was between his freshman and sophomore year, where initially coming out of his freshman year, he was the backup, and then the starter was leaving. And so basically it seemed like he was going to be the starter that year, even though it didn't work out that way. So it's plausible. I mean, I even commented when I had posted it, like, yeah, no one knew that Boston College was fixing basketball games. So Henry Hill said it in passing as a nonchalant fact when getting questioned about other things. So is it possible? Yeah, but Vanderbilt? Well, not intentionally losing, but possibly point shaving. And if you're going to point shave in football, the one person you have to talk to is the quarterback.
You know, now the funniest version of the, and by the way, that sounds a lot more plausible. That makes a lot more sense. And actually, I can't remember. There was somebody who did get busted for point shaving. I think it was in basketball somewhere. And they actually looked at the games and it wasn't working most of the time. Like, there were too many variables that happened with the rest of the team that they were never quite the slam dunks. They weren't like every game was actually working out the way they had hoped. Go ahead.
I was going to say, yeah, the Boston College one. Because they even did the whole 30 for 30 on it. And they was like, yeah. Because Henry was telling from his side, he's like, yeah, if you guys want to fix games in basketball, you need to at least have basically like, you only allow 15 guys on the team. You need to have at least 6 players on the take for it to work. And one of them has to be, and two of them have to be the starting and backup point guard. But yeah, I do know of the other one where it's like, it just wasn't working.
Yeah. Like, they were trying, but, you know, and now I'm imagining the funniest version of this is it ends up this, it wasn't the Italian mob, it was actually one of the bachelorette parties, got really, you know, like, and maybe he was really drunk too, so he thought that this Italian bachelorette was one, like, hey, you in the mob? Of course I'm in the mob, like, you know, I don't know. I'm getting silly, it's getting late, but John, what's, your hands up?
Yeah, first of all, shout out to promotion regulation. The one thing I would add in college football, if I had all the power, the change to college football today. Second of all, Quacker Pie, I know I asked you last time, but please add me to the Supreme Quacker Pie Discord. That's all I want.
It doesn't exist.
No, it's not too late. But and you know, I think that was my favorite story of the week was the was this Italian mob. You know, my first thought was that was he trying to talk to the soccer team at Vanderbilt and just mixed up the two footballs. But additionally, I'll be honest, I think anyone that believes that story, man, I got some seats at an Akron game I can sell you too.
Oh, man. Yeah, especially, yeah, like to pay for seats. Oh, my goodness.
So $5? $5?
Another interesting thing here, just want to throw up, because again, I love that the verb that's come up, socializing some of these proposals for the playoffs, as they like to say. Like, I'm socializing it. But another format that's being considered is because the previous one is this 3-3-2-2-1, which is three SEC, three Big Ten, and then two ACC, two Big 12, and then one G5, and then you get like three remaining spots that'll be at large. Is the other one that's apparently being thrown out there is 2-2-1-1-1 plus seven. Like, they sound so stupid at this point. It sounds like we're doing like my kid's gonna now suddenly like blurt out something, you know, after hearing those numbers. But the idea of two bids for the SEC, two bid automatic bids for the SEC, two automatic bids for the Big Ten, plus the champions of the Big 12, ACC, and the top G5 champ. I mean, that's inevitable. I mean, to me, it's so weird because you're codifying something at that point that would be a shocker if it ever were to be not occurring, like that suddenly the two big conferences don't get two teams in. But the one thing, though, that sounds like it's been, you know, fought off successfully was that terrible idea of guaranteeing auto buys for the champion of the SEC and Big Ten in a 14-team model. That one seems to have died off because, frankly, the ACC was able to say, like, Clemson should have got it many years in a row there. So, you know, that one died off pretty quick. See here, another interesting kind of topic is, you know, kind of lighter on a lighter note, it is actually the 20th anniversary a couple of days ago of the Cougar Tail, the number one selling concession, especially concession in collegiate sports. That's that huge maple bar that they sell at BYU. I ran into one myself, and it's funny to hear it's 20 years old because I guess the first time I tried it, it wasn't that old. I had it over, 2004. Pardon me, 2004. I went to a game at BYU, and you see them all trotting out these donuts. Actually, I didn't even know what it was. It's just saw what I remember visiting BYU as a USC fan in 2004 is number one, everyone was really friendly. Number two, parking was free next to the stadium. Number three, I went in there. Bottle of water was $1, which was just mind-blowing at the time. And I saw the one thing on the menu was $3. I'm like, Cougar Tail, what is this thing? And I remember they brought out this you know, giant maple bar, and I'm like, holy hell. So, yeah, they celebrated the 20th anniversary. So as someone who was impressed when I was surprised with one, you know, awesome. I still, one of my favorite videos, it's from some BYU weekday game, and all the students had one Cougar Tail, and they were all taking bites and like handing it between each other. That one was a little weird, but again, you kind of, I like that kind of dorky stuff you see in college. Elizabeth, you unmuted?
Yes, I did. BYU was kind enough to give us free ice cream at halftime.
What, like just to the fans?
To the visiting fans. Is that not cool?
They really love to try to impress. That is amazing.
Not to be pun not intended, but they bring ice cream to all the visiting fans. So they brought ice cream.
That is wild. I did not know they did that. Well, I didn't do that when I was there, but you know, they keep improving it. They're trying to make people happy. I love that. That's awesome.
But it was really thoughtful. It was cool. So
hey, Quacker Pie, your hands up.
So sorry to go from the wholesomeness to more frustration, but I think that auto bids for specific conferences for no reason other than the fact that they're named the SEC and the Big Ten is one of the worst ideas in college football currently. And am I biased as a Big 12 fan? Yes. But do I also think that every team that plays in the college football playoff has to prove themselves before heading in? Absolutely. And I don't think any teams from any conferences should go in just because they're in a specific conference. Strength of schedule, yes. Conference, no.
Yeah, it's such a weird thing because it feels like it's solving a problem that probably will never happen and is only antagonizing people when it isn't necessary, because that's, I think, the problem of it. I think no one expects there to be a season where three teams from those two conferences don't make it. The 2-1 makes even less sense because I fully expect the champion and the runner-up in the SEC and Big Ten to be in every year. I mean, like, I couldn't imagine. Because, I mean, especially now that we've shifted away from divisions, you're not going to get some weird year like what happened when USC couldn't play in the conference title game in 2011, where UCLA, that had a losing record, went into the conference title game because the one side of the Pac-12 was just that weak. Or, you know, Iowa this past season, which wasn't bad, but, like, again, Iowa versus Michigan was not quite, you know, the we're going to get the top two teams in each conference playing each other in their conference title game. So, really,
that's how return cursed us. God. Then you let him get that touchdown. We have all hell break loose as Iowa's a national championship, even at my team's expense. Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, my goodness.
I just thought of something. If the two major conference champions, the both sides of the conference champion for the SEC and the Big Ten, make the playoffs pretty much automatically, why would you play a conference championship game in the first place?
Oh, well, yeah. You've touched on something that, and I know I touched on this
except
earlier.
For the first round bye idea, which, I mean, come on now.
Well, that was the thing. It seems like we're, the conference title games, even when there was just a 12-team model, are going to eventually, well, they're going to lose value. I think they are going to lose value to some extent. And the question is, you know, where will they be in 5-10 years? And will they still be there? That's an open question. And that was being discussed even before some of these kind of scenarios and where they will go. John, your hands up, and then Ski Mask Smurfy.
Actually, I'll let Ski Mask go because my question is more of a wrap-up question for tonight.
I was having a wrap-up question as well.
You guys are like playing the music. This is like the Oscars. I'm being.
Let's see who has a better rapper question.
I think mine is a pretty good one. Thank you very much. But
I think mine is good too.
Is it going to be the post we had this morning, which was "Is surfing harder than football"? I don't know where that was like the peak offseason. My favorite answer was again by Georgia fan TB25 Uga. You know, if you're on a football field, yes. If you're in the ocean, maybe.
Well, first of all, I'll say surfing is definitely harder, man. That's good.
Yeah.
That's like all body sport. Obviously, even more in football, depending on where you're surfing at. But the main question I have is actually, you talked about Vegas at the beginning of tonight's show as a Vegas enthusiast. A lifetime Vegas enthusiast. What are the recommended spots you have for the people here?
Oh my goodness. Well, boy, does that depend. And that's a very classic lawyer answer that I rely on heavily, but I am a fan of, first of all, when I go, cause different people go to different things. And I'm going to say one of my colleagues at RCFB who's helped sometimes co-hosted the show, JD, He likes going to downtown. He was just telling me he was at Circa, which I know is one of the newer downtown casinos, the Fremont Street area. That's not my vibe. I mean, I still remember when you could drive down Fremont Street, but I tend to go to the Strip. I tend to go luxury hotels. It's just the way I go when I go there. I like to relax. So I tend to stay at places like, the hotel I really liked actually changed hands and they've changed it. So I don't know where it is right now. It used to be the Mandarin Oriental. Now it's the Waldorf Astoria, and they just did a big reno. But I'm taking kids, so I'm staying. I like to get a giant room, so I'm staying at the Venetian because it's a huge room, and the price wasn't as high as the Encore, which is the other place that's got big rooms that I sometimes stay at. I love food; that's the thing. I am very much into haute cuisine and all that stuff. So if you can go completely wild with your finances, the Joel Robuchon Main Dining Room in the MGM is probably one of the best restaurants in the world. And I've been to restaurants all over the world. I've been to French Laundry. I've been to Masa, you know, Takayama's restaurant, Masayoshi Takayama's restaurant in the Time Warner Center, lots of places. So, I mean, that's probably one of the best meals I've ever had. And I've been there a couple times. And the shows are the best. Like, I like Ka by Cirque du Soleil. I think it's one of the best. The LA Times put it best. When it opened way back in the day, they said they were actually like, the story's eh, but they're like, we don't think anything's been staged like this in human history. That's the show I like, but I could go on for ages. I don't want to waste people's time on talking Vegas stuff though, but yeah, no. I like the city. What can I say? Ski Master Murphy, what's your thoughts or your wrap-up question?
Okay, this is for This question is for everybody up here. I know we like to try to stay college football focused, but you know, we're connected also to the big league. And so an interesting thing occurred today in the big league, and this question's for everyone. Given that Aaron Rodgers is on on someone's presidential VP shortlist, who in the history of college football, player or coach, any names you want to give out besides like Ronald Reagan, who obviously did it, who do you think could, and Ford, who do you think could actually win a presidential election?
Nick Saban. I think he could. I think he would.
I agree with that.
Yeah, I think he would be my choice. But John, your hands up.
Yeah, I think Nick Saban for a coach, Brian Bosworth as a player. Man, I want
boss.
President Boss, baby. Let's go.
Oh my goodness.
I honestly think after the promise, post promise national title, Tim Tebow, height of his powers, I think could have easily won a presidential election.
That's an interesting one. He definitely had some popularity there going there. Oh my goodness. Or should I just try to throw out the cliche, you know, let's just make it controversial and just say Dion. oh my goodness. But I think that was a fun place to wrap this one up. I think I'm going to go ahead and tie a bow on this. We've been going for a bit over an hour, and it's always a nice spot to wrap it up. Again, we're not going to have one next week, unfortunately, due to some conflicts where I'm taking my kids to a show. But, you know, it's always fun talking with you. You know, again, I'm going to go ahead and set it up so that the football gods actually take revenge and say, well, probably nothing will happen across the next week, and just watch. I'll be doing an emergency show from my hotel room, like super late at night. But, you know, if nothing happens, we'll go ahead and come back in 2 weeks, normal time. Again, we do these every Tuesday night at 10 p.m. Eastern. Opportunity just to talk college football with all of you. And I always love hearing from everybody who calls in. It's always good hearing new voices and hearing new thoughts. And, you know, if you missed the beginning, this automatically turns into a recording. I'll get this up wherever you get your podcast as RCFB Talk. On behalf of all of us at RCFB, thanks to all of you who joined us. And I'm going to hang up and listen. Take care.